Thank you to Babbel for sponsoring this video.
Do you feel ready, Andrew? I feel ready.
Well, Tara, I think it's time to get going.
Ah, that was good. That was good. Not as good as mine, but
I'll never be as good as you.
You tried.
It's a competition, so let's...
You tried. Let's get to it.
By the way, if you guys are listening to us on Apple or Spotify, if you don't mind giving us a rating, we'd appreciate it.
Please, please do that.
Yeah, it was interesting. The first film was about freedom and learning. The second film, you know, was a misunderstanding, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then this film was about pain and suffering. And I just, this journey we went on with Caesar, I mean, obviously he got to have a family and was... obviously he was head of the entire ape clan, and but he really had such a rough life, and I just love this journey we went on with him, but also it was just so emotional. It was so captivating. And he's really one of my favorite characters. I know we're so fresh off of watching this, but I can honestly say he's one of my favorite characters I've ever seen on screen.
Yeah.
I loved this character so much, what he stood for. Whether he's an ape or human, what it doesn't matter. I just love him so much. Just like the principles he stands behind, and it just everything he went through traumatically, emotionally. I just so invested in him through every step of the way, and we got to experience everything with him from, you know, as a baby where his mother was brutally killed in that laboratory, mm-hmm. to learning just how to become a human from James Franco's character, to raising a family, being the leader of the clan, to succumbing to injuries after Koba, the betrayal there, and then obviously having a friendship with Malcolm, and then everything he went through in this. This is, like, again, the pain and suffering I just mentioned through this film. I mean, and then that moment he had where he could have easily pulled the trigger. And I don't know if that would have made, again, I've never been in a position like that. No one has ever taken away a family member of mine in such a brutally savage way that he went through. So I don't know if that would have taken away the pain and suffering he was feeling throughout the film had he pulled the trigger. But the way he emotionally grew, and in that moment, he decided, no, I'm going to be bigger than that. Obviously, you can make an argument. No, he's just letting Woody Harrelson, the colonel, I'm just going to let him suffer.
Right.
You know, with that too, there's an argument to be made there, but I like to look at it too as like he grew in that moment. Like, this is not what my family would want.
Right. Yeah. But, he didn't let the hate take over.
I'm not Koba.
Yeah. He initially, before he, you know, before he went there, that's a line that I really appreciate, is that I don't know that I can overcome my hate. Like, I'm in the same position as Koba. And it was nice to see him in that moment that, like, he could, even though it was really hard. And going back to that, I'm like, yeah, it probably in the long run, not going to be a great feeling when you seek vengeance, but in that moment, it's going to feel really good. I don't know what I would have done either. I probably would have pulled the trigger. Let's be honest. But overall, I mean, Matt Reeves, bravo. I think following Caesar in this journey, it was nice to see him at an older age, so that when he meets up with Woody Harrelson, I mean, those scenes to me, every scene with him and Woody had the most words in it. That's the most speaking that we have seen, honestly, between an ape and a human. And I feel like both, at least in the last few films, like the last one, not as much. These scenes with him and Woody were phenomenal. I mean, I was taken aback. I mean, I really, really just felt everything. I thought it was just so dang good. And it's so, it's like, it's jarring to see when the apes are there, working for him, and you see how much pain they've gone through and how they turn their back when they first see Caesar. Like, that was a hurtful moment, but it was such, all we needed was one line of like, forgive them, we've been through a lot. And like, that is so, it's so human. It's like, hey, listen, anybody who turns their back on anybody else, if you feel like that person led you to a really dark place, it's sort of like, forgive me, I have to not be here anymore. And to see it again, like in the second movie, them turn around because Caesar put his life on the line. He's like, give him food or water. If you need to kill me, go ahead, pull the trigger. And I thought that that was really, really, powerful. I just thought that was really moving and just a great way to set up Caesar as like one of the most phenomenal leaders. Like he didn't actually change his leadership until the end when he's like, I don't think I can let go of my hate. He hadn't been that leader. He'd been a nice, benevolent leader up till then without a lot of like vengeance, right? He always sought after peace, especially letting those soldiers go. I'm sending a message. I'm not going to kill you. I'm not going to turn into a savage until at the very end of him going, I don't think I can release my hate. But then him letting Woody go, he's going back to like his moral compass, right? And I really like to see that at the end, that he got the peaceful ending. His last picture before his last breath was his child, his family. Apes were safe.
Absolutely.
And he could let go.
Well, and he put the people, to your point, he put his people or his apes before him, his personal vengeance and needs. Whereas, again, that's the contrast and difference between him and Koba. Koba was all about his vengeance and his personal needs versus, like, I mean, you even remember, like, he threw some of threw Rocket's son. I apologize. The name is not coming to me right now, but he threw Rocket's son off the walkway or whatever, and he kicked off a couple other apes that were just in his way. Like, he didn't really give a shit about any of the other apes. He just only cared about himself. And again, we understand his tortured past and why he was doing what he was doing. But yeah, I agree with you. The scenes between him and Woody Harrelson were so captivating. They were so incredible. I'm not very big into heavy exposition scenes, but those scenes were so well acted. The dialogue was so damn good that I don't mind heavy exposition scenes like that. And also, too, we're getting to know why this character is, besides the fact that we got the end of the call at the end of the last movie where, you know, the Gary Oldman and the crew said, hey, these apes are hurting us and charging at us. We need reinforcements. But now we get a little bit more into the backstory of why this guy is doing what he's doing and what, you know, and I thought I bought it. Understood, like, his, again, not understanding, but not agreeing, but understanding his motivations.
Right.
And, he was an extremely well done villain, as such with Koba. These films just do such a great job of just painting a picture of why these villains do what they do. And also, I loved all the obstacles that this film created for Caesar and the rest of the apes. I mean, it just felt like we weren't going to get a win at the end of the day, but obviously we know. But it kept on feeling obstacle after obstacle after obstacle after obstacle nonstop. And this film did an interesting job, too. I just feel like it was a slow burn most of the film. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's not some people are not into slow burn. They want like a lot more, you know, fast paced type of films, which I can totally understand and respect. I don't mind slow burn as long as, you know, what is happening is dramatic and I'm getting the feels and it's interesting. And this film was able to encapsulate all that at once.
Yeah.
I felt like, and obviously we got in the latter part, especially that last action sequence went into the faster pace action, set piece and all that.
Yeah.
But this film, like this, and I would say Alien 1979, really are some of the best things I've ever seen when it comes to doing slow burn really well and keeping it interesting. Because again, slow, especially in this day.
Yeah, because I wasn't bored at all. Like when someone says slow burn, I'm thinking like, it's a slow burn. I can't wait till this speeds up.
Yeah,
except I was engaged from start to finish.
Fully engaged. Yeah, it's so easy to get bored when it's a slow burn type of film. And I was fully, like you said, fully engaged
the entire
time. It's not easy to do.
Right. I absolutely agree. And I really love adding in Nova. And I'm so like, if there's not another film after this, because I have no idea, like I want to follow Nova with the apes. Like that is such a story that I want to see her grow with them and with Maurice.
Yeah.
And I find it so enjoyable that I'll just call him the little hobbit, though Steve Zahn, that he finally found a family. Like him in the beginning of searching, like, he just wants friends. He was so lonely and he had to sacrifice, like get out of his fear to go and help them.
Yeah.
And then he learned so much being with them, found this family, found his friends. And Nova, at the same time, it's really beautiful when she asks, like, am I an ape? And Maurice, you know, gives her the name of Nova. And it's so sweet. And it's so nice that she's just there with them. I want to see her story so badly and how they take care of each other and how they live just happily as apes out there. I would love to just see that, even though that's not a great plot. There's not a lot of like ups and downs in that. I just thought it was such a beautiful ending that I was like, I love that she survived, how well Maurice took care of her.
Oh, yeah.
And that Maurice is left there in a way as like a second leader, the leader now of like apes are strong with or without Caesar. And that is the absolute truth. And I think Maurice is a great number two, which is now a number one. And this movie gives you all the feels.
Oh, for sure. I know they're making a new one right now. I believe that's why we're doing this whole thing. Yeah, because there was a trailer the other day, which I did not watch. I don't know
I
if that's... Yeah, and you guys let us know in the comments. I'm sure we're going to ask Greg probably after this anyways. Yeah. But I don't know if that's like with Cornelius and all of them continuing the story. I have no idea. But you guys let us know in the comments because, again, this is obviously our first time viewing this trilogy.
Yeah.
I would love if it's the continuation. I think that's... why not do that?
That would be great.
Yeah, why would you reboot this? I would say just continue the story. But yeah, let us know in the comments.
And let
I
us
would
know who's directing it. I'm very curious.
Yeah, I doubt it's Matt Reeves because he's doing the Batman 2 right now. He's working on that. But I agree with you. This movie just, I mean, I said it so many different times too, and I believe you did as well. This so many times I was like so moved by so many different things that were happening in the film. And also too, we finally got to hear Maurice speak. Obviously he said Nova for the first time, and then he had that little bit of that conversation with Caesar. Mm-hmm. But you know, and they set up too Maurice, you know, as a character who just has this emotional feel towards humans. Just from the second movie with the actor, I forgot his name, who played Nightcrawler in X-Men Apocalypse. You know, like they had that nice moment where they were reading the book together in the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. So that was a nice setup to this that, you know, where he kind of like has a surrogate daughter now with Nova. And I just thought that was so well set up in that film to get us to here. And yeah, it's interesting, too, because we talk about we mentioned so much about Koba, all the torture and how much he hates human beings. Understandably so. If I were Koba, I'd probably hate human beings too after being tortured and punished by them as much as he was by Malfoy and Brian Cox and all of them. I get it. So was Maurice. He was tortured. He was in that place. I believe, again, you guys can correct me in the comments, but I believe he was in that place just around as long as Koba, and he was beaten, tortured just as much as Koba. He did not hate humans the same way as Koba. But, I mean, obviously, you know, he was, I mean, again, he didn't hate humans as much as Koba, but he was a little more sympathetic and empathetic towards them. And he was a lot more trustworthy. He didn't have, again, the same, you know, the same vengeance towards them. And
right.
I appreciated that. He had more humanity towards them, so I liked seeing the contrast between the two characters.
Hello there, esteemed viewer of The Real Rejects. I, Greg Alba, language connoisseur and worldly gentleman, am here to bestow upon you the secrets of Babbel. Babbel is an engaging language learning app designed for real-life conversations, offering quick 10-minute lessons tailored by linguistic experts to effectively teach you a new language. Its conversation-based approach, enhanced with speech recognition technology, makes Babbel worth trying for anyone looking to learn at their own pace, anytime, anywhere. My dear friends, in this age of monolingual mundanity. Babbel is our beacon of hope, crafted by an army of over 150 language experts. Their lessons are like linguistic caviar, rich, refined, and oh so satisfying. Personal tale of triumph. I once whispered sweet nothings in Spanish, or for the layman, Espanol, to my wife, courtesy of Babbel. Her reaction, well, I'll tell you, she was utterly bewitched. Greg, you silver-tongued devil, no paraphrasing. She exclaimed such vocabulary as I bask in the glory of my perfect pronunciation. Because Babbel isn't just about learning words. It's about embracing the art of conversation with podcasts, live classes, and a veritable smorgasbord of interactive lessons. I know the words I'm saying.
And their speech recognition? It's like having a personal language butler, ensuring every syllable is impeccably crisp. Now brace yourselves for an offer of monumental proportions. Here's a special limited time deal for our viewers and listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription. But again, only for our viewers at babbel.com/rejects. 55% off at babbel.com/rejects. Spelled BABBEL.com/rejects.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Join me, the Greg Alban, the adventure of language mastery at Babbel. We shall not just learn no, nay, we shall conquer the world of communication. Or as they say in Spanish, comunicación.
We're done with this ad.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes Maurice and Caesar such good friends, is that Maurice has a different a viewpoint as to not every human is the same, right? He's regarding, just like Caesar did, of letting those soldiers go as a message, is that there's going to be a lot of bad humans out there. They're going to torture, and they're going to be for the bad side of history. But it doesn't mean that they're all like that. And I mean, we know that Caesar was mainly the one who really knew that, because he was raised mostly by a human.
Of course.
But in learning that, I think Maurice also takes that same point of view, is that they're not all the same. Just like Koba being a bad ape does not mean that all apes are like Koba. Right. So it makes a lot of sense why Maurice and Caesar, having that viewpoint, would be best friends, and why Maurice would be his number two, because he views things in a lot of the same way. And I think it's so important to have like your number two, like your sidekick. And they did such a good job of this. And oh, also, by the way, like, this movie is very touching. I am not broken. I've said this in a few other reactions, but I had long COVID. I was, it was tough. I'm on Prozac, so I forgot how to cry for a little while. That might still be the case. I'm saying yes. And I saw him crying, but I'm just saying, you guys, I'm not broken. I'm still feeling the things. I used to cry a lot, like almost every day. So, hey, we're meeting in the middle here.
Yeah.
So I'm just letting you guys know that, in case you're like, what's wrong with Tara?
Why doesn't she cry?
Nothing. I'm just like, I'm still like, there's some ups and downs there for me, but I'm not like leaking as much. So just wanted you guys to know that, because this was all very touching, especially at the end. Also when he reunites with his son,
and he
hugs him, and I'm just like, I can't, it kills me. It's so beautiful. And again, just the hats off to the way that they display this story, give us this story without a lot of dialogue, except
Absolutely.
When there is dialogue, it's phenomenal.
It's
a great script.
Yeah.
And I don't know of any other film where Matt Reeves makes a film where there is like words that aren't needed, or things that aren't really needed in it. Right. Even the thing that I kind of called somewhat exposition with the Woody Harrelson, we needed that for the story. Woody actually needed to say that out loud to him. And he probably hadn't said it for a long time. Like, there's a virus, and I realize you guys are smart, you're going to take over, and I had to kill my son. Like, that was all stuff that we needed to know. And it wasn't then repeated. It wasn't in a way of like, remember the virus? Remember when he had to like kill his son? Remember all of this stuff? Remember the humans are coming? It's only said like once as a setup of stuff that we needed to know.
Right.
And I think that that to me is, yes, you trust your audience. We don't need to hear it multiple times in different ways. And I appreciate that so much.
I also thought this film did a great job of subverting our expectations, and in a way that was satisfying, and not just to subvert expectations just to do it. And like, a big pet peeve of mine when I watch films is when films are generic, formulaic, and predictable. Mm-hmm. I mean, because a couple times I was like, okay, I could see it going this way and going that way. And like, the film did not, and veered from that. Like when he grabbed that doll from the from Nova, and then got the virus or whatever he got, and he couldn't speak. I didn't see that coming. There were some really good twists and turns in this film.
Yeah.
But again, in a very satisfying way that serviced the characters and the storyline. And I had a feeling, even though I kind of said at the end there, I'm like, oh, thank God Caesar survived. And then you pointed out like, well, hold on, let's wait till the film ends to say that. But I had a feeling, just from the comments we got in the last video, that like, you're going to need the tissues, that I mean, I knew like you guys were probably saying like there's going to be a bunch of apes that are going to die, but I had a feeling it was possibly going to be Caesar, right. Especially when the title's called War for the Planet of the Apes. But still, even if I knew it was possibly coming, like it was still done in such an emotionally satisfying way. His journey and just everything he went through. What a life and journey he went on. And I felt so bad for him, as well as like what an uplifting journey, but such a sad journey as well.
Yeah.
Just like everything he had to go through with James Franco losing him and then obviously his wife and his son. And poor guy. But again, I'm glad he got to see that, you know, he led his fellow apes to freedom and got to have that vision. So that was just so beautifully done. And again, Matt Reeves, the other writer, wonderful writing, direction, cinematography, the music by Michael Giacchino, fantastic. Again, just hit me in all the feels. I could just listen to that music and that was hitting me in the feels. Just so many. And again, the we talked about how wonderful the sets were, that the postal apocalyptic feel in the second film.
Yeah,
again, the waterfront, and also that set that they go to where they're where the commander or the colonel rather, where they're holding them encampment. That was quite a set as well. And
it
was interesting too. You pointed out, it almost had like that Nazi type of feel.
Yeah,
how they were
absolutely.
Like making them slaves there, and then in that closed confinement. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was interesting parallels there for sure. But
and I love that, like also on Woody Harrelson's desk, like right when Caesar enters, in going back to that, it gave me a Nazi Holocaust feel. Is that on one piece of paper was written history, history, history 3 times.
Yeah.
And that gives us an insight to what the filmmaker's kind of trying to say and modeling it after. And I also, and they did a great, great job of that, especially when Woody, he's like shaving his head when he first, when you first see him walk out to the mass of people.
Yeah.
Such a great move, a great direction with that. And I also think one other thing in having the Hobbit character, that's really hard to add into this story, which is such a dramatic and moving story, to bring humor in it without it being like, oh, they're trying to make us laugh. Like sometimes that to me, it feels forced, where I'm like, this is not funny. Why are we doing this? Pacing and tone. And when you add it in, it has to be just right. And they did it just right.
Absolutely.
Like casting Steve Zahn, obviously he's so great. I mean, just phenomenal casting, but also just the pacing and the tone of when he comes in, that it didn't try to like speed anything up. It was still in that world. And you just brought in like peas in a pod versus like the odd man out.
Yeah.
And that was Steve Zahn's character. And he did such a great job of making us go like, oh my God, we love him. He's so charming and so fun. And that gave us something just really fun to like watch and look forward to, especially because all the rest of the film is so
bleak,
moving
dark.
And dramatic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I really, really like that. And that's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah,
so,
no,
bravo.
For sure. No, it was the proper amount of levity while also giving us a very captivating character that had such good development. I mean, because he's such a lonely character. And also, too, I'm not going to call him a coward because he's not. Because when you got characters with guns trying to hunt you down, I'm not going to call him a coward.
Right.
But he had a good arc in terms of like becoming a braver, ape, if you will. Just like helping out, not being lonely anymore. And now, like, because he's got friends and family, and now he's going to, rise to the challenge, if you will.
Yeah.
I like how I use the word rise because of the first film, but like rise to the challenge and now come to the rescue because he was terrified of that place when they were talking about the food. And I believe it was, what was the word that was on the food? It said something because when Caesar saw that word.
Boundary or the border.
Border. Thank you. When they saw border, he's like, you could see the fear. He's like, I'm never going to that place. So again, that was good development. So again, we got levity and we got good character development on top of a very captivating character.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I agree.
It's like, that's why Matt Reeves and the other writer, like, I don't know how you did this. And that's why I kept saying like throughout the film, and I don't care if I get ripped in the comments, although I don't think I'm going to, because I know a lot of people love this film on top of the trilogy. I'm going to check afterwards, but I am so, well, not shocked because nothing shocks me anymore with the Academy Awards, but I can't believe this movie would not at least be nominated.
I think it did say actually on the screen Oscar nominee. So
oh, really?
I think it did get a nod, which is good.
Visual effects I can definitely see, and even Michael Giacchino for the music, but Andy Serkis should have been nominated for Best Actor.
Agreed.
I still think... Screenplay is a tough one because they're so particular about that.
Yeah.
Direction, I would personally give it to Matt Reeves, but I could see why they wouldn't.
And Best Picture.
And Best Picture. Yeah. Because there's 10 to 11, I personally would give it for this one.
Yes, I
nomination.
Agree. Okay, get into those fun facts. We're going to do some trivia before we let you guys go. Please don't forget to like, comment, share this so we can even, we might even go back and watch the originals, the OGs, you guys.
Oh yeah, let us know if you guys.
We would love to know that. Also let us know what else you kind of want us to watch that might be in this vein or whatnot. And yeah, let's get to these facts.
Read a few of them. So Matt Reeves pointed out that the apes in Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes don't wear clothing. Okay. So the ape society scene in Planet of the Apes, that's the 1968 film, wears clothing.
Oh.
And Bad Ape is also supposed to be the start of progression in this direction. To survive in a harsh winter, he wears heavy winter coats he scavenged. This is primarily necessitated by the fact that he is bald, similarly to Rocket. However, while Rocket likely has alopecia, Bad Ape seems to have lost his hair from old age.
Ah, okay. I love that.
Let's see. While promoting Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Andy Serkis was asked if ALZ-113 drug has also affected apes outside of Caesar's tribe. Matt Reeves and Mark Baumbach took note of it, which led to the introduction of Bad Ape in this film.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll read three more, then we'll call it. Bad Ape's fall was a real fall. Matt Reeves liked it so much, he kept it. The great thing about performance capture is that in any other movie, you plan out shots to such a degree that there's no spontaneity. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. But here, because all of it is just a series of cameras, we go on an exploration.
Cool.
Nice. When Marie speaks to the human child with her new name, Nova.
Yeah.
The dialogue is the actual voice of Charlton Heston.
Wow.
Speaking the same words to Linda Harrison in Planet of the Apes. The voice has been electronically altered, but is still clearly recognizable.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm sure many of
that's a great fact.
I'm sure we're going to get some comments who didn't reach this part of the video that are going to let us know that in the comments, but we know that now.
Yeah.
Cool. That's like, that's a really cool
that's
one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good fact.
I did know Charlton Heston was in the original, but I would never have known that about the voice. All right, two more. According to Matt Reeves, it was Woody Harrelson's idea to begin addressing Caesar by listing the military rivals of the past. Wellington and Napoleon, Grant and Lee, Custer and Sitting Bull, while noting that as an ape, Caesar would not know what he was talking about.
Hmm.
Okay. I'll read one spoilerific one because there's like 10,000 in this movie. Usually it's the top ones. Here we go. Last one. This is the top one. The giant X that the humans used to crucify the apes outside their camp are the same designs as the X used as markers to the Forbidden Zone and Planet of the Apes, the 1968 one.
Okay, the OG, bringing it back.
Yes.
Little Easter eggs there. We love it.
If we ever watch that one, we will have a better idea.
Know.
Now, like, there's the Easter egg from the War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
But seriously, this is one of, again, Lord of the Rings is always the staple for me for the greatest trilogy. I know Dark Knight, Back to the Future, those are right there with Lord of the Rings. But Lord of the Rings for me is always the staple of the greatest trilogy ever. This is right up there too, now for me. I mean, this is an incredible trilogy. I loved it so much.
I agree. 10 out of 10, you guys. I love this movie. Don't forget, like, share, comment. Tell us what you think. We love you guys so much. Thank you for joining us and being here.
Thank you, guys.
And we'll be back. We'll be back soon. We love you so much. Bye.